Paul Hawksby, Andy Jacobs here on Talk Sport. We'll continue to build up then to Pompey Saints tonight with Mickey Quinn later on in the show. And salute an octogenarian football coach. 66 years he's been coaching sides. He's quite a character. Larry Barilli joins us. Before that, though, here to chat about our biography is Jane Couch. And if you have a passing interest in boxing, you'll know women boxers. You'll know Nicola Adams, of course. You'll know Katie Taylor. You might even know Tavannah Marshall or Tasha Jonas. But you probably wouldn't know any of them if it wasn't for Jane. She was a trailblazer for women's boxing and women's sport. And she's told her story in the final round. Good to see you. Thanks for coming in.
Good to see you too, both of you.
When it came down to it, when she won the Olympic gold, Nicola Adams, she name-checked you, didn't she?
She did, yeah. She's a good girl, Nick. You know, she's done a lot for amateur boxing herself, you know. Because there was no amateur boxing when I was boxing, so... Yeah. Yeah, she's been like the standout amateur for a long time now, and she's doing a fantastic job.
Your story reminds me a bit of Jean-Marc Bosman, who's the guy who kind of paved the way for lots of footballers to do incredibly well. But didn't necessarily reap the benefits of it themselves. And that's a kind of bit of a theme of the book, isn't it, Jane? That you didn't set out to kind of fight the establishment. You just wanted to box purely for the sport. You wanted the right to do it, to potentially make a living that you'd seen in other countries, in this country. And every point you were blocked, weren't you?
Yeah, every single point. And I took it up in 1993. So in them days, it was really unheard of. I mean, even now, the girls are still getting a bit of stigma towards... Oh, why'd you fight? It's not ladylike and stuff. But in my day, it was really bad, and you was against the establishment that was running it. You know, the Boxing Board of Control, the promoters, the big promoters like Frank Warren, Frank Maloney.
Frank's
now
got Nicola Adams headlining bills. It's incredible, isn't it?
Well, but then it doesn't mean to say he's changed his mind on women boxing. He's just been told to do by BT Sport that they've to have a woman on. Probably Frank.
You don't think attitudes have changed?
No.
Then? You don't?
But some people might have mellowed a little bit towards it, but no, Frank Warren's attitude can't change. Not for some of the things that he said and to go out of his way to block everything that I did. So, like, if I was on a talk show, say like this, I'd have Frank Maloney or Frank Warren on the other line going, oh, yeah, she shouldn't be doing it. It's not right. It's not ladylike. So... That's fine if they didn't like it. There's a lot of people that don't like it.
Including Ricky Hatton, who's a good friend of yours. And Ricky says to you, he'll always support you. He's chuffed for everything you've achieved, but he still doesn't like women boxing, does he?
But again, with Ricky, he still supported me and still respected what I did.
Yeah.
You know, so, and we're still very, very good friends. We have been from since day one, but he wasn't rude or disrespectful trying to block everything. He tried to help me, where the others was just... It was just horrendous, really, what happened.
That comes across in the book. I mean, the first time, to kind of praise the story, you watched the TV show, you saw some American girl boxers, and you thought, I'd like to do that, I'd like to try that. And, you know, these days, if you wanted to do that, a girl could go along to a gym and get the chance to do that and would be probably welcomed in most places.
They would,
whereas you went there... And they told you to clear off. They just thought you were joking, didn't they? They wouldn't even have you in the building.
It was just everybody, though. It was even your friends, even my own best friend at the time, Carol. She was like, what are you doing? What do you want to do that for? Because it was so unheard of in that day. But I just wanted to... I thought, I'll go and do it in America then. If you don't want me here, I'm off.
So that was the first time you watched that TV show and you saw a kind of professional boxing or women boxing and you thought... You didn't even know that existed, as a thing.
Didn't even know it existed. So I went down to the gym in Fleetwood and met Frank Smallbone, who was the trainer there. And he was like, well, come back tomorrow night if you want. He was great, Frank. He was getting on.
He was training you kind of after hours. He was almost training you on the sly, wasn't he? And he put a lot on the line himself as a trainer to do that, because he thought it was wrong, didn't he?
Because he was an amateur boxing trainer, so... You're not really allowed to train, like, unless they're in the amateur. And because it wasn't allowed, Frank, like, just sneaked me in and helped me and a couple of the lads that he used to train helped me too. But they were so supportive. It was strange because even then, Frank was in his 60s then. Mm. So you would think that he'd be more against it than the younger ones, but he wasn't. He was just because I think he boxed in the army, so he saw women in the army, like, doing all the stuff that men did. So he was brilliant, but he was probably one of very few.
Yeah.
How similar, I mean, Million Dollar Baby, the film, you, people must have said that to you. It's a similar sort of story, isn't it?
It is very similar, yeah. I think they probably pinched my life story there, didn't they?
He quit, shouldn't he, really?
I said, what is it, the female Billy Elliot, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, there was it. I mean, you you brought up in Fleetwood and you were a bit of a tomboy, you say. You had a couple of male mates, couple of lads who were your mates, and you, the kids on the local estate would kick off with them and you'd get involved, and so you'd end up in sort of tear-ups with the local kids.
Yeah, well, my brother's a punk rock drummer, so he was with the UK Subs for a bit, so Charlie Harper's a big friend of mine. I remember I was boxing at York Hall and Charlie Harper turned up with his Mohican, and I think he was like in his 60s at that time. He's like, where's Jane? I want to see Couchy box. And, you know, and he was brilliant, but then I was brought up in that punk scene, so that you pretty much had to learn how to fight just to be around them guys.
Yeah. And then you did manage to get a couple of fights. They weren't sanctioned fights because you couldn't sanction the British Boxing Board of Control wouldn't recognise women fighters at all, would they?
Yeah, they wouldn't, and that was another reason for taking the case, because you could make it safer, you know, because with the British Boxing Board of Control, you have to have like a brain scan and your blood test, so you know that you're healthy going into the ring. But I was like in this nightclub in Wigan, and I think they just pulled the policewoman off the street. First time I got paid to knock a copper out, so that's pretty good.
Was it easy to find opponents? I mean, how many women would you say? It was almost like it was an underground scene. So how many women boxers were kind of out there feeling like you were at that time?
Well, back at that time, because it was unlicensed, there wasn't that many, but abroad, it was doing quite well, you know.
Sweden, it was big, because they kind of set up a kind of women's fights.
Well, Germany was probably, apart from America, Germany was your biggest, because you had Regina Halmeck, and she was selling out 20,000 in a stadium.
Wow.
It's unheard of for a male boxer to do that here.
Yeah.
And she was doing it over there, and she was just, and she was a good little fighter as well. She was a flyweight. It was hard to get opponents, but I was quite prepared to travel, which I did. I just got my rucksack and just went around the world and just took them all on.
Yeah. Jane Couchy's with us. We're chatting about her book, The Final Round. She found herself kind of reluctantly going through the court. So we'll talk about that and how she found it difficult to reflect on her boxing career in later years. We'll chat more in a few moments' time.
Hawksby and Jacobs on TalkSport with Green King. For 10% off drinks and chances to win great prizes, including Premier League tickets, download the season ticket app now. 18 plus drink aware.
Trailblazer for women's boxing, Jane Couch with us in the studio. We're chatting about her autobiography, The Final Round. And we kind of left you just before the break there. You're kind of travelling around the world, getting fights when you can, often being ripped off, not being paid after the fight by sort of unscrupulous promoters. And then you reluctantly find yourself in the courtroom with the British Boxing Board of Control after a kind of meeting with sort of two top barristers who think, what's going on? You not being allowed to fight is unlawful.
Yeah, it was strange on that. I think I was in America, I just won a title in America, and I'd come back and done like a local radio or TV show in England. And a lady called Sarah Leslie, who was solicitor at the time for sex discrimination, ran me and she said, they can't do that, it's illegal. I'm like, what do you mean? You can't have boxing in England, that's why I'm boxing abroad. So then she then brought me to London. We met up with Dinah Rose QC, and then I think the case was a couple of years in the making because they had to get all the evidence together. And they worked so hard. And in the end, I think they actually proved it was less dangerous for a woman to box than it was for a man because of the power.
That's interesting.
Yeah, and they actually brought that up at the finish. And like, I suppose, any contact sport, the man and woman, the man's always going to be more powerful. It's just nature. It's just...
What I'm quite interested in is, when you first went to box, did you immediately take to it? Did you immediately have the skills, or did somebody recognise that in you? And did you know that you had that?
Yeah, I didn't have the skills. And to be fair, even after 5 world titles, I was never the most technical boxer. I was just tough. I was just like, just walk forward fighter and always in a good fight. So win, lose or draw, I was always like the fight of the night. And I was, yeah, I wasn't the most technical, but I suppose I got a bit older, I got a bit better. But no, I'd just take anybody on. Yeah. It didn't matter who it was, where it was, I'd just fight them.
Having been officially sanctioned then and having got your licence, the kind of boxing closed the door on you a little bit, didn't you sense there was a little bit of a closed shop on you that, OK, you might have your licence, but that doesn't mean we're going to promote you, it doesn't mean we're going to give you fights?
Yeah, that's it. Once the border control knew they couldn't get away with just not giving me the licence and that they had to let me fight in this country, then the next step was probably the promoters had to shut the door because they just didn't want it. And it wasn't just the board, it wasn't just the promoters, it was the media, it was people in general.
Yeah.
It was just so unaccepted. I remember they did a poll on daytime TV on one of the daytime shows and it was like, is Jane Couch a freak or not? And, you know, just because you wanted to box and as much as, like, I did loads of interviews, like, in them days, just saying, look, just let me box. I don't want any trouble, just let me box. Yeah. But no, they just berated me.
There was that Michael Barrymore show as well, as you went on there. And, like, you talk about it kind of being a bit of a freak show, and they kind of put you on there and you had that kind of incident. It made all the tabloids. So it must have been difficult because, obviously, you know, you were in it for the sport, you were enjoying it, just wanted the right to box and you've just been playing.
I think as well, they put me on a lot of the big shows and Barrymore in them days was millions audience. Yeah, we had three channels in them days, didn't we? Mm. But then you sort of get, once you do a few media interviews, you get sort of this label and then they're going, she's from Fleetwood and she's a street fighter. It was all made up. It was like none of that.
Yeah.
But they made it that because, and then I thought, well, maybe that's what they expect. So I just played along with them half of the time. And it wasn't till I retired, really, that I realised it was me that was getting played. And
yeah. You did struggle, Jane. You admit, after boxing, when you kind of took stock of your career, you kind of felt there'd been some wasted years there and you'd put yourself through so much for the sport and it hadn't really paid you back. And you did struggle. I mean, in the end, you tell in the book how you have this kind of funeral for your boxing career. You're told to kind of literally put it in a box and bury it and sort of leave it behind and don't let it kind of eat away at you.
But that's what I had to do because, especially with boxing, if I hadn't buried boxing, then you see, that's what happens with a lot of fighters and they retire and then they become a boxing trainer. Okay, some are successful, but 9 out of 10 are not. Mm. The boxing board have no support whatsoever for retired fighters or for fighters that have been injured, that are struggling. I speak to fighters on a daily basis that are struggling now and there's just nothing in place. So if you're in another sport, maybe, and you're having a bad day, you're Ronaldo or something, they probably get someone into counselling and have a chat with you and give you whatever you want. But with boxing, you're just like, what's wrong with you? Just get on with it.
Is it the route? Is it the, what is it? Is it the not being as fit as you was? Is it the routine? I suppose it's a bit of everything. You kind of, your life's been so regimented, isn't it? And then suddenly it's not.
Well, there you are. You're just training 3 times a day, and then all of a sudden, it's just, you can eat what you want, you can do what you want. A professional athlete works very hard and becomes, I suppose it's a bit like being institutionalised, really. Mm. And then when I retired, I felt like I was learning everything again, even like getting in a lift, getting on the train. It was so unbeknown to me because all I'd been is in a gym. Like, it was like being in a prison just for weeks and weeks and months and years, and it just goes on. And then, like I said, when you are struggling mentally, there's nobody you can talk to from your organisation, which there should be something. Yeah.
And that's not, you don't feel that's changed. You don't feel boxing is still not doing enough at that point of retirement.
Oh, no, they've got nothing. Like, they've got nothing in place. Even like boxers that have been like damaged, you know, had brain injuries. There's a few lads that they've had to try and go back to work, but because they're not fully functional, they're finding it hard to get a job, and that's all through boxing. But no, the board, probably and rightly so, they're just there for them, and like most people are in the world.
There's enough money in boxing, though, you would think, for some kind of fund some organisation to set up and support boxers.
Yeah,
at the
definitely.
End of their career.
And I think there is some sort of fund, but I just don't think it's geared up to help the right people. And you know, they've got their rules. And like I said, with the board, then you can't tell them what to do. They know that, you know, they're gods. They can, they know what's going on, and they know some of these. But I mean, Harold Graham, one of the greatest boxers ever to come out. You know, it's just sad. It's just sad that he's living the way he is.
Yeah. And you've heard stories like that. I mean,
that's bad.
Kirkland Langham fighters like that, you know, great.
Excellent sort of, fighter.
Yeah, just these guys that you wonder what would happen to them. And you
I just think as well, even when they retired, if the board just called them, because the board get money every time they fight, if the board just called Kirkland and said, listen, I know you've retired, but if there's anything we can do, or if you want to, like, come to a show, and or a promoter rings them up and say, yeah, there's a few tickets there, and keep them
involved.
Keep
them in the family,
but they don't do that. As soon as they finish with you, it's like, see you later.
What about the broadcasting on boxing? I mean, we've seen a lot of women now not just commenting on women's football, but coming into men's football and virtually, and even the rugby, we're seeing Maggie Alfonsi.
Yeah.
So what about boxing? Is there still a prejudice against women commenting on men's boxing?
I think Anna Woolhouse, I think she does it for Sky, and she's very good.
Yeah, she is.
Very, very good at her job. And I think, I don't know why, but she said to me when we did an interview for Sky the other day, she said, well, people ask me every day, well, what is it like in a man's world? And she's just defending herself all the time. Yeah. Well, as a presenter, if you're good at your job, you shouldn't have to be defending what you do. What you do, your show speaks with you two. Your show speaks for itself, doesn't it? So it should do with her, really.
Yeah, I don't know.
You did a bit of promoting. You kind of stayed involved in the sport. Are you still involved?
No, I buried it after the funeral. That was me done.
That was it with the sport completely?
Yeah. I think it's like with anything in life, like, I don't know, maybe a breakup in a relationship. If you don't bury it, then you're never going to be happy again in your life. And since I've done that, I've never been as happy. I'm flying. I'm great.
That's great.
I'm having a great time.
And would you do it differently, looking back? Would you still have kind of stuck out for that career and boxed? And would you have loved to be starting now, looking at the way
I'd like to be starting, or somebody had gone before me, because, you know, to get away with what they got away with doing to me and things they said about me, if I could have seen someone going through that, I would have thought, I don't think you didn't really sign up for that. And you know, I started boxing and it just took me on this mad journey around the world and meeting all these famous people and something that I was totally alien to.
Yeah.
And that, I think that was a lot of problem, because I had no media training. I didn't have the right education to speak to people on that level that were right at the top of the game. So I think that's why I struggled.
Yeah.
Because of the support. There's just no support there. And the girls now are still struggling, and I still don't think they get the credit and the support that the men do.
Well, the nation ultimately recognised you won the MBE, didn't you, for services to boxing.
I was quite shocked when I got that. Yeah. I was like, well, that's a bit weird. Why are you giving me that when you wouldn't even let me fight?
Yeah.
But Prince Charles is a big boxing fan, and when I was getting the MBE, I couldn't believe it.
No,
he was going, what about Ricky Hahn taking all them fans to Vegas? And I'm thinking,
really? I never knew
it's
that.
Great. That's brilliant.
And he knew all about the fans going to Vegas for Ricky.
Wow.
And he was a really real support as well. That's really amazing. Nice on the day.
Well, we didn't get around to a lot of the stories. There's some fantastic stories of your road trips. And then, of course, we see the picture of you fighting Holly Holm as well. Of course, who went on to MMA.
She went on and did brilliant in MMA, didn't she? As soon as she beat
Ronda Rousey.
Ronda Rousey.
That was it, wasn't it? Yeah.
I had a bet on her, though. I knew she'd beat Rousey because I'd fought her. So I knew how tough she was.
Well, it's a great book. I mean, wish you well.
Continued happiness.
As we said, again, all the girls owe you a great debt of gratitude. So thanks for coming in.
And thanks for having me. Thank you.
The Final Round, written with Abby Smith, Jane's autobiography, is available now, published by Pitch. It's Paul Hawksby and Andy Jacobs here on TalkSport.